Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and God bless. Welcome to Tribe Family Channel. I am the creator of Tribe Family Channel, Beverly Black, and it is an honor, privilege, and pleasure to dedicate this show to Black Lives Matter. That phenomenal song that you just heard was delivered by the Sounds of Blackness, Black Lives Matter. This show is co-hosted by Bijan C. Bang, critically acclaimed Washington-based columnist and author. He will be interviewing the filmmaker of the director of the film, the Rosenwald film. And without further ado, I am going to bring on Bijan to tell us all about today's show. Hello, Bijan. How are you?
Hello, Beverly. Thanks for having me, and welcome, Aviva.
Hi, you all.
Hello. Without further ado, I want to turn over the show to Bijan, and he is going to introduce our special guest.
Aviva Kempner is the producer and director of Rosenwald, which chronicles the life and work of Julius Rosenwald, who was president of Sears, and also in partnership with Booker T. Washington and communities around the country, helped found 5,500 black schools in the then Jim Crow South. And we're going to hear a trailer that describes the premise of the film.
Julius Rosenwald became partners with Richard Sears in 1895.
Sears was what you could call a swashbuckling salesman. He would sell things he didn't have. He would sell things he didn't even understand. What he enjoyed was the selling. Under Rosenwald's leadership, Sears Roebuck became the largest retailer in the country.
Julius Rosenwald had two personalities. He was a tough businessman. And then, of course, this other side, the civil rights champion, somebody who really saw the disgrace in this country of African Americans being treated so poorly.
Education was seen as a dangerous thing, and white Southerners wanted to keep it out of black people's hands.
Rosenwald was clearly affected by the Jewish belief in tzedakah. Giving charity was justice and righteousness. It was a fundamental commandment.
It's a wonderful story of cooperation between this philanthropist, who did not have to care about black people, but who did, and who expended his considerable wealth in ensuring that they got their fair shake in America. Julius Rosenwald and Booker T. Washington combined with this plan for building black schools, they are engaging in a radical experiment. It's a wonder they were able to achieve it, but achieve it they did. And in the end, 5,000 plus schools are built all over the South.
Julius Rosenwald created black schools throughout the South. Without that initiative, we would have had a different America.
It was a little school, a short distance from my home, walking distance. Beautiful little building. It was a Rosenwald school. It was the only school we had.
I thought my school was grand. It was the Lafayette County Training School, so there.
The Rosenwald Fund was the single most important funding agency for African American culture in the 20th century.
If you look at the list of people who received money from the Rosenwald Fund, it's literally a who's who of black America.
In the Jewish tradition, we talk about righteous action. This notion of tikkun olam, you do work on repairing the world.
Aviva, yes, Aviva, let's begin by discussing your first inspiration toward making the film.
Okay. Well, it turns out that, you know, for years, it's now 37 years, I'm making films. I make films about underknown Jewish heroes. And actually, in the beginning of that trailer, it shows a little scene of from my baseball film on Hank Greenberg and from my TV doc on Gertrude Berg and the Goldbergs. So I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And 12 years ago, last August, I was on Martha's Vineyard, an island you know well, Bijan, because your family has vacationed there for how many years?
About 70.
Yeah, well. And I heard, I went to go to hear a speech entitled Blacks and Jews, because one, Rabbi David Saperstein was talking, who's someone, you know, I've long admired and know, and also the civil rights leader as activist and intellectual, Julian Bond. So I'm sitting there thinking that, of course, when Julian went up to speak, he would be talking about the civil rights era. But he went way back, earlier in the last century, and he started talking about Julius Rosenwald. And I always call it, it's like the flashlight that goes off, and I decided that this is a film I had to make next. And 12 and a half years later, the film came out last fall, and now I'm doing a lot of the extras for it. So thanks to Julian Bond, who not only inspired me to make the film, but he also, luckily, he was living in town. He and his wife became dear friends. He was a consultant from, you know, who I should interview, the mm-hmm. substance material in the film, what artwork I should use. And it was just a real pleasure last summer when the film was done. He and David Saperstein and I sort of recreating that moment on the Vineyard, premiered the film at the National NAACP convention in Chicago, and then we did the same thing in New York at the Center for Jewish History. But sadly, Julian died the weekend the film opened up, and it was interesting because he was going for his last X-ray, and Pam Horowitz, his wife, told me that he said to his lab technician, or his X-ray, whoever was taking X-rays for him, he says, "Now make sure you see this film on Julius Rosenwald," because it was down in Florida, and it's so much a story of the South.
Yes. There's so many things that I want to make sure that we touch on, including the White House recently, and we want to touch on Julius's first awareness of the plight of Black education in the South, and I also want to make sure we circle back to Julian because of last summer's NAACP convention. But chronologically, how did Julius and what in his background and upbringing
right.
led him to find out about the plight in the South?
Right. Well, listen, he was living in Chicago, and by the turn of the century, he had bought in with his brother-in-law to the to be part owners of Sears, because Sears really needed the cash. And also, it was interesting, Sears and Roebuck, who had started the company, Sears had ordered suits from Rosenwald. That's what the business he was in prior to buying into Sears and Roebuck. And he owed Rosenwald money, so it was a really good deal for Rosenwald to get equity in Sears. And, you know, he was a big businessman in Chicago. Now, for his father had been an immigrant Jew who had come to this country in the mid-1850s, actually 1850, and had been a peddler. He had, like, walked the Appalachian Trail, selling things from house to house, which was a pretty tough living, especially if you didn't know English. And he had married into the family. And by the time Julius Rosenwald was born, they were living in Springfield. Okay. Now, there's a real significance of that because Springfield, just coincidentally, was also the place where, of course, Abraham Lincoln lived. Mm-hmm. And it was Julius Rosenwald's uncle that sold him suits. And one of the uncles actually came back and helped bring the body back from Washington. And later on, when Julius Rosenwald was a young boy, he sold medallions they built a memorial to Lincoln in Springfield.
Wow.
And the family lived kitty corner across the street from from Lincoln's house. And I'll talk later why that was so significant. In any event, there was the legacy of Lincoln that he grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in a Jewish home, and part of our tradition is talking about Tikkun Olam, repairing the world. And by the time
yes.
he was a businessman and going to synagogue in Chicago, there was this amazing rabbi named Emil Hirsch who practiced social gospel, who talked about you have to worry about your brethren, you know, was upset about sort of the labor conditions in Chicago, and was one of the original signers to the NAACP call for action. And that's the kind of things he would preach from his pulpit, and Rosenwald would help. You know, they would have NAACP activities in the synagogue. So that was happening. But meanwhile, Julius Rosenwald had read On His Own Volition, Up from Slavery by Booker T. Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And that really changed him, and he went out of his way to bring Booker T. Washington to Chicago for a luncheon at this hotel, which, of course, had never honored anyone African-American.
Right.
Even though it was the North, it wasn't necessarily completely progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, Booker T. Washington said to Julius Rosenwald, well, you know, I'd like you to be on the board of Tuskegee. He, you know, had been a freed slave. This is the whole legacy of the story. Booker T. had graduated, I think it was from Hampton, and then started Tuskegee from scratch. And Rosenwald went down, and actually he brought that rabbi I talked about and his wife and some other family members, and he fell in love with the school. I mean, Booker T. was very good about, you know, really showing, you know, having spiritual sung, having the students present, and it was so impressive. He said, okay, I'll be on the board. Meanwhile, back in Chicago, Rosenwald had seen the effects, the positive and the negative effects of the Great Migration. By that time, a lot of African Americans were coming up north, and he saw what horrible conditions, you know, they were living in. And people from the YMCA, and there was like a black component to that, were coming to Rosenwald and said, listen, we have to build some black Ys for African Americans. Would you help? And he was big into matching funds. He says, okay, I'll match you, you know, I'll give you $25,000 if it's going to be built. And in fact, President Taft asked him to come to Washington. And, you know, we both live in Washington. I know you know that Y too. And he gave money for the Y on 12th Street, which is now the Thurgood Marshall Center. And they were able to build Ys all around the country. So he was already involved with that. And when he turned 50, he decided, again, I had talked about Tikkun Olam, but tzedakah, charity, is also a very big principle in Judaism, and especially the Judaism he practiced. And he decided at age 50 to give a lot of money away. So he said to Booker T., what would you want? And Booker T. says, well, you know, what we really need is we've established this great university at Tuskegee, but what we don't have is good, you know, education. There's segregation, and, of course, it's not separate but equal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not equal, although it is separate. So he said, okay, we'll build five schools. So they built five schools, and a great story about that is there had been the first African-American graduate from MIT, Robert Taylor, who is the great-great-grandfather of Valerie Jarrett, you know, the domestic advisor to President Obama, and he designed these schools. They're very green architecture, that the light would come in, and that they were much nicer. And you know, the schools for African Americans were very disheveled or awful, and these were really beautiful schools. So they built five. Rosenwald liked what he saw, and from the five, as the years went on, all over the South, 5,000 schools were built. Then there was another several hundred either libraries or buildings for some of the teachers. And what was amazing is that 600,000 students were educated at these schools. And the community would do a third, the black community, or oftentimes even more. They would do the building. They would donate the land. The state educational boards also put in a third, and Rosenwald put in a third. And at one point in the beginning, Rosenwald said, well, we can just use the kid houses from Sears. And Booker T. said, no. We're going to build the schools, which was the principle of Tuskegee. You know, the students learn how to build. And in fact, that made all the difference. They really felt invested in them. And these schools went on for years, and people like Maya Angelou went to a Rosenwald school, Representative John Lewis, the great civil rights leader, as well as Eugene Robinson, who writes for the Washington Post, and you can see on MSNBC. And what emerged was this great, and George Wolf went to one, and he's right now up for a Tony for his Shuffle Long show on Broadway. So
Robinson won a Pulitzer.
Yes, right. So you have this incredible body of graduates who, you know, then became the who's who. So if that what should we still talk? Oh, when I what comes around is going around, and that's the Lincoln, because it turns out that a lot of the communities wanted to have photographs or pictures of people, you know, made responsible for the school. Mm-hmm. One was Booker T. Washington. It was his idea. And for a while, they organized the building of the schools in Tuskegee. The second one was Lincoln. You know, you freed the slaves. Mm-hmm. But the third one was the picture of Julius Rosenwald. So that's why I said, as a little boy, he was selling medallions.
Right.
You know, in honor of Lincoln for the memorial. And, you know, in his old age, he was on the wall of these schools that he helped build.
Wow. The impact of the schools, given the inequality of education that you cited in the South, can clearly be seen in the who's who of the graduates. When you met people, just to give people in the audience a sense of when people have complaints and you get some backlash into the human rights conversation, and people say things like, well, that was so long ago, or Jim Crow was, you know, some ancient concept. Give people a sense of when you went around the country and you conducted research, you actually met people who were relatively healthy and cogent.
That's the beauty of all these screenings. I mean, it's just unbelievable. People come up to me, socially, north and south, and stand up. I went to a Rosenwald school, or here's my children, and now they understand what it was. You know, it was interesting about the schools. I mean, George Wolfe was so effusive about it. His mother actually taught there, that there was so much, and Maya Angelou talks about this too, there was so much support in the community for the schools, because, as I said, you know, they essentially had built them and felt a part of them, but it was also the way that education was the most powerful tool, especially if you think about how people could not, you know, slaves were purposely kept from, you know, reading and writing, I mean, being educated, because it was a way you could keep people down. So education is the most powerful tool of, you know, being able to succeed. And there was such pride. In a way, they were like Montessori schools, because all the ages were in one building, although some were big, some of the buildings were bigger than others, and people would talk about how they would learn from the grade above them. And what's great is there's such pride in these schools that what they're doing nowadays is the National Trust for Historical Preservation has decided that the schools, 100 of the schools should be restored. And again, there's this whole movement, oftentimes the people who went to the schools joining in together, and all over the South you'll see these great restorations, and they're either museums or community centers, and people just have such warm feelings talking about what these Rosenwald schools meant for them.
When you began researching the project and you started reaching out to scholars and former students and people who have been impacted by the schools, what were some of the first patterns that you started noticing that were going to be helpful in telling the story in the documentary, and first themes?
Well, we filmed at about five schools, and just the positive feeling people had and the strong memories. I mean, there's nothing like having people talk about something they really cared at and made a difference in their lives. And it just comes across so much on the screen. And now I'm working on the extras, because there's another thing that's happened too. A lot of the, you know, these people, as I said, who went to schools are the ones working on restoring them. So I was able to film in places where they helped restore, which also had brought up their memories. You know, it's not something that in the distant past. You know, they even brought in old buildings. And now you'll have the new museum, the African American Museum. They're going to have a little section on the Rosenwald schools. They even got some desks. But, you know, Rosenwald did not stop at the schools. He also saw the lack of any good housing in Chicago for the middle upper class, because Chicago was such a segregated city.
Yeah.
And he built the Michigan Garden Apartments, which Valerie Jarrett's grandfather ran, and her mother and aunt talk in the film. And this is a place where the fighter Joe Louis lived in, and Metcalf mm-hmm. the runner, and Jesse Owens and Marian Anderson would come visit. It was sort of the who's who. As Timmy O'Black says in the film, it was kind of swanky. And that also made a big difference before the desegregation finally happened in Chicago. Actually, to illustrate how crowded the housing was, I used a scene from the movie Raisin in the Sun, mm-hmm. especially since Lorraine Hansberry's own father had grown up in Chicago, and her own father had been a desegregation lawyer.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because another desegregation lawyer is Charles Hamilton Houston, who uh-huh. had been the mentor to Thurgood Marshall. And he mm-hmm. actually went down south and took footage of some of the conditions of schools that I use in the film. Just like today, especially the Black Lives Matter movement, are taking video or, you know, mm-hmm. taping, you know, police brutality and issues like that. And Black Lives Matter is like the first dedication in my film. So a lot of it
so
has
to do with...
So he
was using that, they used that footage of those skills toward Brown versus the Board.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It was film documentation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
people don't talk about that.
And, you know, and they did some of the work on the case in the 12th Street Y that Rosenwald had given that money on the request of Taft, and even now some of the same work that's being done in that is just sort of coming around, including some people just met. We're making a study guide for these DVD extras that are going to come out with the film in the mm-hmm. fall, and they just met at the 12th Street Y. So I always say what comes around goes around.
And it's named after Thurgood Marshall.
Right, right. And he worked in the and the local chapter of the NAACP is in that building. So, again, mm-hmm. history repeats itself in a positive way.
What type of resistance was there among the... You said that a third of the funds came from the local school boards. What kind of resistance
yeah.
or...
Well, I think it was... I believe it was the state school boards. Well, they mm-hmm. had a federal responsibility to give, but I think some states were more reluctant than others because one thing I realized in this map that we present in the film, the most densely shown number of schools were in North mm-hmm. Carolina. So there must have been a little bit more progressive state education board there. And, you know, there was also risk. There's one guy I have in the film that talks about in Mississippi where he went to a Rosenwald school. Mr. Buckner talks about there being, the school was burned down and rebuilt. Mm-hmm. And then there's another story told in the film that they secretly built the school so people wouldn't get wind of it, you know, and try mm-hmm. to do destruction. And I know Talmadge really hated them in Georgia, but I guess he couldn't do anything about it. So, you know, and Rosenwald was also doing this at a point where Leo Frank, who was the Jewish, the man who was running a factory and was unfairly mm-hmm. accused of killing one of his workers, who mm-hmm. Is who also, and he was, Rosenwald had worked on his case and he was lynched, and, you know, but Rosenwald was not, what do you call it, scared. I mean, he continued to do what he felt was the right thing to do.
What impact or mm-hmm. describe to the audience what the Rosenwald Art Fellowships were and then give them
yeah.
a feel for some of the recipients.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
Describe for the audience what the Rosenwald Art Fellowships and Humanities Fellowships were and,
right.
and a feel
so
for who some of the recipients
were. This is the other amazing
were.
Thing that Rosenwald did. He was he decided, he was on the Rockefeller board, and then he got involved with wanting to do something else, and he realized, he started talking to a man named Embry, who had grown up actually being very influenced by a grandfather who lived in Fee, Kentucky, where there was a very integrated religious community, and he hired him to run the Rosenwald Fund. And one of their biggest programs was directing to giving. It was sort of like the MacArthur Foundation today, giving to artisans and intellectuals earlier in their career for support, mm-hmm. and they specifically directed to African Americans. So people like Marian Anderson got to go study leader in Germany, or Augusta Savage got to go to Europe, or mm-hmm. Gordon Parks got money to do his work, you know, when he did the famous photographs in Washington. And the whole Jacob Lawrence series of The Great Migration were done with the Rosenwald Fund. And it's just who's who in African-American intelligentsia, including Julian Bond's father and uncle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really a great story of how you can have a vision and make a difference. And another story we have in the film is Dr. Charles Drew, who invented
yes.
plasma, who couldn't finish medical school without going, you know, having a grant, and he was given a grant.
So you're really talking about when you look at some of the things that those people you just named did, especially the latter, in the case of Drew, people impacting not just their lives, but benefiting hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. And you know what's also interesting is I had one African-American scholar see the film, and what she said to me I think is really true. Well, first of all, most people say, I've never heard of this story. Jewish, mm-hmm. black, white, everyone. I mean, they're just like amazed. And he's my most underknown hero. But what the scholar said to me is, you know, there's a lot of films about slavery. And by mm-hmm. the way, I do recommend people, I just wrote a little blog about it. They should go back and try to watch Underground, which is about slavery and people trying to escape. But mm-hmm. in any event, there's films about slavery and there's films about the civil rights era, but there's not really many or hardly any films in between until, of course, Wilkerson's book is made into a film or a film series. So I'm
right.
very proud about that. And another, you know, older white woman came up to me and said that what the film really does is, she said, I've gone to graduate school. I've
mm-hmm.
learned more tonight watching this film about African-American history than I ever learned. And, you know, to me, we have this, you know, you have a T-shirt that says Rosenwald on the front, and on the back it says History Matters. Because
mm-hmm.
I think really that's the problem, that we don't know enough about our own history and legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm working so hard on these extras, and I got a big grant from the Ford Foundation to take the film to, you know, to have it in all the schools with a teacher's guide, as well as all these extra,
wow.
you know, stories you might not know, because, you know, Bijan, you're being modest. You were my first researcher with me, and, you know, we even presented at one of the National Trust meeting, is that there's more stories about, like, Julius Rosenwald and the Mayor Thompson in Chicago
mm-hmm.
thought, rightly so, that Birth of the Nation was so racist that they tried to prevent it from being shown in Chicago at first while it was having a screening at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty incredible that, you know, and then also in the race riots that happened in Chicago, Rosenwald was on the commission to study them and try to make recommendations, some of which I think could be still used today in Chicago. And he also was on the crime commission, you know, Al Capone existed then. So here was a businessman that really felt it was important to get involved in your community, which, you know, I think both people getting involved in their schools and philanthropy, people with means getting involved in the communities that exist in the city are great role models for today. I know, because
yeah,
I grew up in Detroit.
Yeah, there's a lot of lessons for education reform. Segueing from what you said about the screening of Birth of a Nation in the White House, moving fast forwarding 100 years from D.W. Griffith, I understand that there was a film-related event at the White House recently.
Yeah, 101 years. Yeah, actually, a week ago Monday, It's called Jewish Heritage Month this month. So they invited the film to be shown at the White House, and it was great because Valerie Jarrett spoke, you know, after the film was shown, and she was very personal, of course, because her mother and her aunt are in it, and said that how much Rosenwald is really the legacy of America and what you can do and, you know, make a difference. And that's what I'm hoping more than anything. I always say not all of us can give away $62 million, which is what he did in his lifetime. But all of us can be a little bit of a Julius Rosenwald and do things in our community. So I'm very proud of that.
He modestly had some stipulations about the program and the dispensation of the funds that might contribute to the fact that the schools are not that widely known today. What did he stipulate in terms of the name and the length of the
period? There's a thing called spending down principle in philanthropy, and his philosophy was that the fund should only last like 25 years after his death. So, in fact, you hear of the Rockefeller Foundation and, you know, the, what do you call it, foundation now, Ford, which I'm very grateful to, but you don't hear anything about the Rosenwald Fund because he closed it down. And he really felt that everyone in their lifetime should be doing the work they do that they know about and that the next generation can start their work. And, in fact, Rosenwald's kids were very involved. One of them paid for the half of the Great Migration series to be in Museum of Modern Art.
Mm-hmm.
Other ones were involved in, a lot of their family members were involved in bringing their relatives over before, you know, Nazi-torn Germany, et cetera, et cetera. Another one I was just finishing, Edith Stern was very involved in the civil rights movement with Cokie Roberts' parents. So it's not that they didn't, you know, they continued on the work of their parents.
So this is considered a proud legacy within the family, or is it sort of a case-by-case?
Very proud. Several family members are in the film, and, you know, next week he's being honored and installed in the Philadelphia Jewish Museum. So it continues to be a very important family legacy, as it should be, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then great-grandson runs Justice Care. You know, I can't even mention all the things all the grandchildren do in terms of the legacy. Yeah.
And when you were at the White House, did you present or speak afterwards or have a Q&A?
Yes, it was myself and Hillary Shelton, who's with the Washington office of the NAACP, and David Saperstein, who's now our ambassador for religion. So it's been very exciting to show this to another audience. But, you know, like every week, I mean, I've just been in Dayton and Toledo. Next week I go to St. Louis, Ulysses S. Grant Museum. I'm going to be in Chicago. The ADL and the Urban League are doing an event. So there isn't really a time that I don't, you know, I'm not on the road with the film. We're still trying to promote it. And we do a lot of blogging, too. It was very nice that George Wolfe, who has this great new show on TV called Shuffle Along, on Broadway, and nominated for a Tony, is a graduate from the Rosenwald Schools. I mean, there's that direct legacy right there. He started performing at a Rosenwald School when he was a young boy.
And see, when you think about George Wolfe and Eugene Robinson, they're not particularly old.
Right. Well, because the schools lasted a long time, you know, through the 50s, so when they were young, yeah. So, and Jay Johnson, who is our head of Homeland Security, his grandfather was one of the advisors to the fund. So, you know, the legacy, I mean, that's something Julius Rosenwald talks about, Julian Bond talks about, is mm-hmm. those who were involved with the school also affected the civil rights movement and went on. John Hope Franklin got a Roosevelt Grant. I mean, he was the great historian. It never ends.
And when you are in theaters, what are some of the more common questions, and what are some of the ones that you've only heard maybe once or twice that were really outstanding questions?
Well, I think the two comments I mentioned about, I never knew all about this. Well, the remark most people mention is, how come we never heard of him? This is just incredible. I mean, even people grew up in Chicago. And then the mm-hmm. second thing is, what a legacy, how important it is to, American history. And that's, how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
And have you ever had anyone ask you something that you can remember to this day that was like a one-of-a-kind question or very unique? Like personally, maybe even about Julius?
I think it's more about, the first showing I had a young, he happens to be Jewish, but just a young person come out and said, this is what I want to do with my life. That to me was almost made me cry. Of course, I had just finished the film, so anything would make me cry then. But it was more about, this is inspiring. That's what I want more of, most of all. We collected books at the theater that I helped save here in Washington called the Avalon, where it played for 8 weeks. And, I think also recently someone else said something that was really important to me, that it's a positive film about African Americans. And for me, it's a positive film about a Jewish American. So mm-hmm. I think, there's enough struggle that we all have to go through in this country, especially African Americans, that to see a positive example. And I'm just honored that I was able to be a part of that, and one that I really think teaches by example how, philanthropy, and even if you're, just volunteerism involved with city problems or rural problems, can make a difference in society.
How, when Julius was able to visit some of the buildings that were finished, what kind of reception would they have for him in the preparation, and how was he moved?
There's a great scene in the film where they would line up all the kids. It was sort of staged the way when he would, he and other guests would visit Tuskegee, and he was so moved by one of the events because a young girl brought him flowers. He cried. I mean, you could just, and I think it was a joy feeling like, my money had really gone somewhere. And I think that's repeated by a lot of family members who are supporting mm-hmm. these restoration of schools and going to openings. And one reason I'm working so hard on the extras, because there's going to be like another half hour on restoring schools, so they mm-hmm. can show it at these places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is the restoration solely being funded by the trust or somebody like Lowe's as a partner?
Lowe's, but also the Spielberg Foundation supported the making of the film, and they got so excited about the schools, they even gave more money for the schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what goes around comes around, and the Ford Foundation just supporting me on doing the excerpts, it's just wonderful.
Yes.
And I think it's put philanthropy in a really good light. It's been written up in a lot of philanthropy magazines, and I know a lot of people involved in philanthropy have seen it.
Oh, good model. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the buildings themselves, you talked a little bit about being green before their time. One, where did the inspiration for the model come from? And two, could you talk a little bit more about the design?
Well, I was going to say I'm not an architect, but actually I have a master's in urban planning, but it's not quite an architect. Well, Zoser, who used to run the program, the architecture program at Tuskegee, talked about how, it was very much the big, tall windows that would be at a certain point a certain way, that when the sun would come in, that they would get the most sun, and mm-hmm. that had a lot to do with it. Just the fact they were new, mm-hmm. and and solid. That was important. Back then, they had outhouses. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a very funny story how everyone loved reading the Sears catalog, and it's how you could order and dream about things you could order, but you could also use it in the outhouse later on. Recycle it. So that's recycling right there. But it was basically the design, you know, the window panes and how large they were and in what direction they faced were the big aspects. And just the fact that they were new and quality made. And I think most importantly, done by the community.
Speaking of community, given the fact that in 1915, you're only a couple of generations out from slavery, and given the fact that there was no equal education, how did they find and qualify enough teachers?
That's the film I'm hoping that will still be done, because there's a woman, a Quaker woman, who gave $1 million to develop a whole program for African-American teachers, and they were called the Jeans Teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
there was a training
that was
taking place.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't think in those poor counties that anyone would really, you know, 50 years out from slavery, really have much of a basis themselves.
Right.
And
I'm sorry, what's your point? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering, in as he and Washington were planning, you know, which counties were going to serve and things like that, how did they deal with staffing? Because there would be so many people that hadn't been educated themselves.
Well, no, there was the Jeans Teachers, and then those were people who had graduated from the schools. A lot of it was using the community people right there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, developing lending libraries. You know, the other thing they did was they would have cooking classes there. I mean, it was really a community center.
Mm.
You know, it's a good, clean, new building that, you know, the community could come to.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And in your research, did you find it difficult or challenging to find images of the buildings, how they looked during the period?
No, what was great about the Rosenwald Fund, all its papers, it then moved to Nashville, and then all its papers were given to Fisk, which, you know, was where I had to do a lot of research. So I had all the applications for the fund. I had a lot of pictures of the schools and also in Tuskegee, you know, both institutions. And what's really exciting, the Logan Foundation that gave us a lot of money for the making of the film has just given us a grant. And Ethelbert Miller is in the film. He just wrote a book of poetry. He's a poet. And he and I are going to take the film to some historical black colleges this fall. And I hadn't taken the film to Tuskegee or Fisk yet, so I'm very excited about that. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. Well, it's very interesting how many themes you have in the film that come full circle, like the Springfield theme, obviously Birth of a Nation theme, because Wilson showed it. It's horrible.
Right.
But
yeah,
first,
I can't wait to show
really
that at
first
Princeton.
Yeah, it was the first blockbuster, and Wilson was so impressed by it. I mean, just from a technological standpoint, they were taken aback.
Yeah.
Much less the racial overtones in the film. So I'm glad you went to the White House 101 years later with something
right.
On the total other end of the spectrum.
Right, exactly.
And
the other thing is these Michigan Garden apartments that have been in disarray and abandoned for decades, they're just now reopening, and they're going to be called the Rosenwald Flats. I'm going to be seeing them, you know, next month, so I'm very excited about that.
What was the initiative behind that? Just wear and tear?
Well, there's the bare bones of the building, you know, the big, it was inspired. I forgot to mention, Rosenwald had taken his kids to Germany. You know, the family was from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And in Munich, there was this science museum, and his one son loved it so much, he came back and he built the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago. Now, that's still functioning. There was never a down period for that. I always tease that when Rosenwald went to Europe, he came back and did another project because it was a Vienna housing, like a whole city block that
inspired
the Michigan Garden Apartments. But it's really the older woman, Pat Dowell, that made the difference with that.
But even the library doesn't really bear his name like you see. I mean, the museum doesn't bear his name.
Yeah, he was very modest about not wanting his name on things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you get the sense of from your research that you did about how he and Washington got along and what that, because Washington died before he did. What was the relationship like? Was it just business?
No, they wrote beautiful letters to each other. If there had been time in the film, I would have used it. I think they really had a very close and mutual admiration society, as we say, relationship. And that made total sense.
Well, aren't they kind of both self-made in a sense?
Exactly. I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they might have had there's some type of identification that they might have had for each other, appreciation. Also, and I think you sort of alluded to this in the film, if not came right out and said it, if you look at the efficiency of Sears and the efficiency of Tuskegee, they probably admired what each other had talked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
From a building, just from running an organization, yeah. Very, very, very similar in that way, especially both of them in terms of doing things that involves either producing or education or design or manufacturing, shipping. Both of them seem like they were a few decades ahead of their time. You talk a little bit about the type
of person. Oh, by the way, Booker T. Washington obviously was helped enormously, but also Du Bois got two Rosenwald grants and really admired Rosenwald. And I think he felt that both men had a vision that needed to be done.
Well, that's important because audience members only hear about Booker T. and Washington and Du Bois and sort of rivalry, for lack of a better term, or not having the same philosophy about one having more of an educational philosophy and one more being a southerner, just a bit more agriculture.
Exactly.
Although he did found a college, you can't say he was really.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Although Washington did found a college, so it's kind of simplistic to say that he was in total disagreement with Du Bois.
Right.
So, that's really the fellowships. Even the fellowships, probably because so many years have passed, are not that widely known. But at least his name is on them. So when you're reading about a Hughes or reading about a Savage, you do come across the name. I would imagine more people tell you they've heard of the fellowship than the schools if they've heard of either one.
Right.
Because they study, the artists and the authors.
Well, it depends. If you're, it's almost a north-south thing because lot of the artists. I mean, do you know that Jacob Lawrence, when he did the Great Migration series, it was based on his parents coming north and his parents' stories and his parents' friends' stories. He had never gone north. It was on the second grant that he went north. That, to me, is pretty incredible. I mean, both the beauty of his imagination, but also, and he didn't necessarily like what he saw. And it was true also when Langston went down.
Right. One had never been north and one had never been south.
Right.
Very, very. Yeah, when you think about, now, did Hurston get one?
Yes, Zora got one, and so did, it's just like who's who. It's all on the website, which I should mention. You can see what places it's playing, rosenwaldfilm.org, because the DVD won't be out until the fall, but you can definitely go to rosenwaldfilm.org.
Well, let's close with two things. Some theater showings that are coming up maybe in the western part of the country, and also what topics.
Oh, yeah. You always have to go. Let me see. You'd have to go to the website. I know it's in Messina. There's some near, I think, Sacramento. It's coming up.
Yeah, on the West Coast.
Yes, right, I know. But it's something on the – it's, again, I'm trying to go to it right now. But – But you can always ask us to tell you where the screenings are going to be.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, you talked some about this, but in terms of the extras, what type of topics?
Oh, it's going to be, June 5th in Fort Bragg, California.
Okay.
Mendocino Film Festival.
That's southern, okay.
I've never heard of Fort Bragg. And in Georgia, mm-hmm. it's going to be in Griffin, Georgia. Yeah, but that's not out west, right? Yeah.
And you say you say at least two of the HBCUs in the fall.
Right. We'll have five. And there's like three screenings coming up in Chicago, or four. Excuse me, in Georgia. And then I'm in Chicago, St. Louis a week from Friday. And then in Chicago, that's going to be a great one, on June 14th. And Barbara Bowman, who grew up in the Michigan Garden Apartments, Valerie Jarrett's mother, is speaking with me.
Well, okay, so that covers. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what you hope to cover in the extras that you
right.
didn't.
Well, more on all the artisans. I mean, just more stories on Gordon Parks and Jacob Lawrence and Augusta Savage. Because for me, one of the saddest stories is she did this incredible piece of sculpture for the New York World's Fair that depicted, to go with Lift Up Every Voice, of the African-American national anthem. And she did not have the money to bring the piece back, and it was destroyed. So I'm hoping to have it recreated, maybe at the African-American Museum. I've talked to people there. So, as a daughter of an artist, the thought that my mother's work would be destroyed would just, so upset me.
And then truly lastly, as great as the film is and as comprehensive, just for people's edification, are there any books that you would recommend that even
It's written at the end of the film. One is Peter Askely, who's a grandson, writes about his grandfather. Second is Isabel Wilkerson's book on the Great Migration, because that's such an important theme in the film.
Sure.
Another is Stephanie Deutsch wrote about the relationship between Booker T. Washington and Julius Rosenwald. So,
right.
And then we're going to have over 2 hours of extras. So
people will really be able to. And what level of schools have expressed interest in using guys? Are they all secondary,
everyone,
or middle, or
and
college?
We're working with Teaching for Change, so it's a hearing.
Wow.
It goes for everyone, and everyone says this has to be in all the schools. Huh. So I've never had such a response for my film like this. So I'm very excited.
It's about education.
Yeah.
And many other things. Concentric circles with its sparsity.
Right. Right.
Well, this is really informative, hopefully entertaining. I hope people get a chance to see screenings in their region.
Yeah.
Be sure to go to the website and look for the closest screenings
right.
in your region.
And
share,
Dijon, thank you so much
it,
for the interview, but also thank you for all the key work you did in the in researching the film. It was really wonderful.
Oh, sure.
Made
it
a big
a
difference.
It was a learning. I feel entirely differently about the civil rights movement, knowing that a lot of the people that were educated in the South would not have had any background had they not had that type of schooling. He's really the unsung figure of the civil rights movement, even though technically people don't consider it when he started.
Right. But it's a lot, it's the precursor that's important too.
Well, if you don't have if you look at the people who were the activists, they're all straight A, they're all very, very strong students, and a lot of them are beneficiaries.
Right. Well, not some of them didn't finish school too.
Well,
to be able to go.
But in a lot of cases, a lot of them, like the Diane, I mean, not the Diane Nash, attended the Rosewall. She's from Chicago, but a lot of the really sharp students, like Stokely's and DeBatter, were college at 15, 16 years old, Dr. King, Angela Davis, people of that nature. Because activists tend to be more well-read than the rest of the student body, and that
right.
exposes you to some things. So again, thank you for sharing this very, very inspirational story. And again, folks, go to the URLs that Aviva mentioned to see screenings in your area.
RosenwaldFilm.org. And thank you so much to our hostess for having us there today.
Yes, thanks, Beverly, so much.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Bijan and Aviva. This has been a wonderful show, rife with Black history, with history in general, and with Jewish history. I want to commend both of you for your critically acclaimed work. And Bijan, where can our listeners find you online? As we know where we can find Aviva and the Rosenwald film, but where can our listeners find you, Bijan?
I'm going to get off now because actually I'm going into a meeting about trying to change the name of the Washington football team.
Okay.
So, another
thank
whole
you
subject
so
for another
much.
Show.
Continued
okay,
blessings
bye-bye.
In your work. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
And to answer your question, Beverly, the easiest is at Bijan C. Bain on Twitter. B-I-J-A-N-C-B-A-Y-N-E.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I definitely want to thank you for your time and talent in interviewing Aviva and going over all of this wonderful history with regards to Mr. Julius Rosenwald, CEO and chairman of Sears and Roebuck, philanthropist, and the man who built 5,500 schools in the Southern Jim Crow era for African Americans, having been inspired by Booker T. Washington. I want to remind our listeners that they can also connect with Tribe Family Channel on Twitter at Tribe Family US. And we have a special announcement launching September 1st. With Bijan Bain will be a new show, Lega Seeds, Standing Upon Our Roots. Bijan will be hosting families from or family members from the legacies of Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, Dr. Charles Drew, and many, many more. So please stay tuned and visit and connect with Tribe Family Channel. And please follow our show at blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. Our producer, Gumbo for the Soul International, is at gumbofortheSoul.com. I am the creator, Beverly Black Johnson, and you can find me at tribefamilychannel.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, on Twitter, at gumbofortheSoul.com. Last but not least, Bijan, I want to thank our executive producer, Mr. Bruce George, the creator and co-founder of Russell Simmons' Deaf Poetry Jam on HBO. He is the creator of the movement Genius is Common, and we are going to listen to an excerpt about Genius is Common at the conclusion of this show. So I want you to visit our executive producer at geniusiscommon.com and express your genius.
Thank you.
Greetings. This is Bruce George, founder of the Genius is Common movement. Just wanted to say hello to everybody that has joined the movement thus far. Definitely spread the word. We're in 23 states and 3 countries as of the 30th of March, 2016. I would implore you all to go to geniusiscommon.com and go to YouTube. Upload your videos on YouTube, and I'm looking forward to seeing your videos, all right? God bless.